Appearing as I am this morning, in the place of my good friend, John Thornton, I thought it appropriate that in considering the spiritual side of Abraham Lincoln, we should do so with a historian's regard for the recorded facts. This is the more important because over the years, the name of Lincoln has been attached to a mass of unsupported assertions and of unauthenticated anecdotes. In his lifetime, Lincoln was subjected to almost inconceivable vilification. His character was traduced, his motives impugned. Much of this abuse came from Northern enemies. With his tragic death in the midst of celebration of Lee's surrender and the triumph of the Union, there came a dramatic change. Among his eulogists, many of whom were clergymen, there was a growing tendency to claim him as what would be conventionally termed a Christian. There were even attempts to attach him to one or another specific sect. From the best informed of his biographers, these statements have found little support. Herndon and others who knew him best in his Illinois days have assured us that he was not then an orthodox believer in any creed. Nevertheless, we may say, with little fear of contradiction, that Lincoln had from the beginning what may properly be termed a profoundly religious nature. To begin with, Lincoln was a deeply thoughtful man, a deeply serious man. He was not one of those who lived day after day, never asking why and wherefore. Perhaps because of a number of elements in his past, the shadows cast on the legitimacy of his mother and himself, the roving nature of his youth with ties formed, then broken in Kentucky, Indiana, and Illinois, the failures which had marked his long struggle for success and recognition, the death of Ann Rutledge, whom he loved, he was a deeply constitutionally melancholy man. Had he known it, he would have loved Samuel Johnson's The Vanity of Human Wishes. Among contemporary pieces, he was often heard repeating the gloomy lines by William Knox. Oh, why should the spirit of mortal be proud? Like a swift fleeting meteor, a fast flying cloud, a flash of the lightning, a break of the wave, man passeth from life to his rest in the grave. Like the lines of Thanatopsis, the poem enforces the inevitability, the universality of death. For Lincoln, death was an ever-present reality. This is, to be sure, one of the inescapable facts of life and one which pagan and Christian alike recognize. As a religious man, Lincoln began, therefore, with a recognition of the limitations thrown about us by our mortality, our birth and our death, are in the hands of God. In addition, he recognized the limitations of human ambition. In short, he showed himself possessed of the Christian virtue of humility, one of the marks of the truly great. In the years that followed, it was his destiny to wield tremendous and often absolute, almost absolute power. More than once, he was to be charged with exercising it arbitrarily and even tyrannically. How is this to be reconciled with the modesty and humility of which I've been speaking? Because of the growing feeling on his part that it was his lot to stand in a position of unique responsibility and obligation. Parting from his old friends at Springfield, he said, "A duty's devolved upon me, which is perhaps greater than that which has devolved upon any other man since the days of Washington." He never could have succeeded except for the aid of divine providence, upon which he at all times relied. I feel that I cannot succeed without the same divine aid which sustained him, and in the same almighty being I place my reliance for support. And I hope you, my friends, will all pray that I may receive that divine assistance, without which I cannot succeed, but with which success is certain. Lincoln, be it remembered, never shifted or avoided responsibility. To take the decisive steps which might initiate a great civil war was a dreadful thing. It required confidence. It required confidence in the rightness and justness of his decision. In the moments which brought forth such decisions, there was more than the normal solitariness of human beings and the inevitable dependence on the voice of the infinite. In the words of the second inaugural, "With firmness in the right as God gives us to see the right." Lincoln's religion was not one of declared beliefs and creeds. His religion was that of devotion to convictions, of acknowledged obligations and responsibilities. But it was more than this. And those who have found in his life something of the Christ-like have reason to do so. With stern devotion to duty and tenacity of purpose, Lincoln mingled mercy and love of his fellow men. Why, let us ask ourselves, is the character of Lincoln revered beyond any other in our history? It is because in every official act there was an absence of hate, a patience under misunderstanding, whether willful or genuine, an endurance under insult, and a quality of mercy suggesting Jesus. How many times, not merely in fiction, but in reality, he intervened to soften some official act, to save some lad asleep on sentry duty and condemned to die, or to express sympathy for some grieving mother. His magnanimity to the defeated South is universally recognized. Archibald Rutledge, in an article written some years ago for Scribner's, "A Southerner Views Lincoln," says, "Of all the great men on the Union side, he alone appeared to discern that the North owed the South a simple justice of compassion." Too long, I think, the opinion has prevailed that the North was the only one who had anything to forgive. Lincoln knew better. He planned to forgive, and he hoped to be forgiven. In the words of the Apostle Paul, speaking of the Christian virtues, "But the greatest of these is charity." Let us then, in paying tribute this morning as Christians to a great American, remember him for his exemplification of the qualities of the Christian citizen, devotion to the fundamental concepts of our republic, humility in recognizing his limitations as a man, coupled with willingness to accept responsibility, patience in the enduring of the misunderstanding and slander which accompany public service, charity toward the unfortunate and oppressed, and what is often more difficult, charity toward one's enemies.